My name is Sarah, and you're listening to All Access Pass Season 5 on CITR 101.9 FM. We're broadcasting live from Vancouver on the unceded territory of the Hukuminam speaking Musqueam people. In the studio today, I'm joined by my Accessibility Collective teammates.
Hi!
Hello!
Hello! today's show is a good one, as we'll talk about what's the latest news happening around Vancouver and in Canada. We'll also be talking about an event that happened 3 weeks ago, and that is Possibilities, 15th Annual Inclusion Art Show and Sale. However, before we dive into our today's show topic, we're going to our first song break.
Hi, I'm Jessie. Our first music selection comes from Leah Mice. This song is We Are the Beat. Leah's music style has been described as avant-garde electroid pop. The Australian artist was born with monocular vision. She is a live artist, producer, and has designed instruments such as the one-handed violin. And it operates using a throat microphone to alter the pitch of the bowed string. The second song selection. Thank you.
Welcome back to All Access Pass. The song you just heard was We Are the Beat from Leah Mice. Thanks to Jesse for the song and a little bit of information on the artist. Now, let's get to our show topic. Here's DP and Brett on global climate strike event that happened a month ago.
Thanks, Sarah. Over 100,000 people attended the global climate strike at Vancouver's City Hall on September 27th before marching over the Cambie Street Bridge into downtown. 1 year ago, Vancouver saw its first climate strike protest. About 20 students gathered at City Hall without much fanfare. This year, however, more participated, young, old, and everyone in between, calling for all levels of government to take action on climate change. It was organized by Sustainability Teens Vancouver, who are part of the International Fridays for hashtag Fridays for Future and hashtag strikes, climate strike movement. The movement was inspired by Swedish teen climate activist Greta Thunberg, who started the movement back in August 2018.
Disabled people as a group are some of the most at risk when it comes to climate change related disasters. In many cases, there's not enough support to be found for disabled people during times of necessary evacuation. In the 2005 Hurricane Katrina that hit the area surrounding New Orleans in the U.S., research from the National Council on Disability found that a disproportionate number of disabled people were killed in the hurricane. On top of this, those that were lucky enough to be evacuated had trouble finding new housing or support networks, and many disaster shelters were not equipped with items like ramps or respirators. Aside from this, the new prevalence of natural disasters, global climate, temperature rise, will cause a myriad of other specialized issues for disabled people, such as massive harm to those with spinal cord injuries. This being said, it's incredibly heartening that so many people came out and showed up for the World Climate Strike, and especially the Vancouver Climate Strike. Now we're going to our next song break. This song is called Echoes by Eliza Hull.
Okay, so, do we go one? Okay. I attended this event, and I've never been to a protest event before, so this was first for me. And honestly speaking, it was an amazing experience to be a part of an event that is calling and demanding us to take action to make the world a better place. For future generations. People were all so nice by moving out of the way so that my support staff and I could march along all the protesters. I was asked by many people, do you need any help? Do you want me to take any pictures for you? And are you okay? And I wasn't really expecting that at all. But it was a really friendly event to state an extremely important message. I was impressed by the protesters that people had posters that they designed. And they were very creative, as well as some of them had quite funny messages written on them, telling the politicians around the world that our planet is dying because of the poor decisions they are making and things need to change for the better. One poster read, "The planet is hotter than my imaginary boyfriend." And I also saw many people in costumes, such as some girl had dressed up as a sad Mother Earth, and with her mouth taped shut. And furthermore, I did notice that there were some other people with disabilities there too, but unfortunately, I could not stop and chat with them. as the march kept moving along, and it was way too much crowded for my liking. But nonetheless, it was such a fun day, and I will never forget it. And would I go next year's event, too, if there is one? You bet I will. Here's Brett talking about Greta Thunberg's visit to Vancouver last Friday.
Welcome back to All Access Pass. Eliza Hull is an Australian musician who developed Charcot-Marie tooth disorder when she was a kid. She's been singing since she was 5 and also plays the piano. Last Friday, on the 25th of October, Greta Thunberg arrived in Vancouver to speak at a second large climate rally in downtown. Police estimate that around 10,000 people attended. The rally was held in front of the Vancouver Art Gallery. Greta's speech came after a number of other speeches by local and Indigenous activists, including the acclaimed environmentalist David Suzuki. The strike was organized by one of our local Vancouver climate action groups, called Sustainabilities. The rally came just after a lawsuit was filed against the Canadian government by 15 young Canadians who assert that the government policies have contributed to the dangers of climate change.
Oh.
A song by Liza Hall, and the song is called Echoes. And thanks to Brett for that song. And now here is Jesse.
World Climate Strike, and especially the Vancouver Climate Strike. Now we're going to our next song break. This song is called Echoes by Liza Hall.
Okay, so now I'm sorry about that. The song that Jesse had for us is also Leah Mice, and the song was "We Are the Beat," and then also we had Susan. I can't really say her last name, but with Hannah Naho. So thank you especially for Jesse for those songs. Now we're going to go to Anton, who's going to be talking or reporting about the transit strike.
Exactly. So I'm sure by now we have all heard about the bus strike that might be happening on Thursday at midnight. And let me just say, they chose the worst time to strike. I have a midterm this Friday. My family's out of town, so I suppose I'm going to have to walk to UBC. But the good news is it's not going to be a full strike, hopefully. Because when I first heard the news, I thought it was going to be mayhem. Because if all buses stopped in Vancouver, that would just be it, end of the world. But I was also shocked that when I heard that UBC will also expect all students and staff to continue classes as usual, but will not be providing any sort of transportation. buses will not only be able be packed, some will not be able to even get on. For example, there's only one safe wheelchair, scooter, or stroller space on the bus. Mm-hmm. I suppose I have a bias here, but I think either students can have an excuse for not being for being unable to arrive for tests and classes, or UBC, a well-funded school, should provide some sort of support, at least to those who are unable to get on the packed bus or take a taxi or carpool. Now we're going to get into politics a little bit. So while I was looking through some statements the Liberal Party have said, I noticed a question posed to our Prime Minister Trudeau. The question asked what he thought about the recent investigations into the RCMP after the organization allegedly removed one of their officers from the forces because of their disability. Mr. Trudeau answered by saying that it is unacceptable for anyone to lose their job because of their disability. Unfortunately, that sounds very vague and does not sound like anything would change. While yes, there are already laws set in place that make it illegal for people to fire their workers for disability, it is incredibly easy to fire someone for an unrelated cause, in quotes. And unfortunately, most lawsuits fail against that because it is really difficult to prove. I think more funding for accommodations for disabilities in the companies would help more. Then the companies would not feel like it would be such a commitment having someone with a disability on their team. And I'm sure that that is only one of the good solutions to this problem. Now here's Nate to explain some things on the federal election.
All right. Thank you, Anton. Now, what I wanted to go through here is just some of the statements that the Liberal government has made about disability and what they promised to do if they got elected. Now, as we know, that was the case. The Liberals were elected in with a minority government this past week, and they made a statement saying that they would evaluate all existing and future government policies for their impact on disabled residents. So this came from Carla Qualtro, the Liberals' Minister for Accessibility Issues, and it was raised shortly after disabled voters raised concerns about the lack of discussion of issues affecting their lives during the campaign. The Liberals released a disability equality statement earlier that week, a document that wasn't actually in their original platform. Now, what the party is going to do here is they said that they were going to be subjecting any policies that are currently in place to an analysis on how it's going to affect people with disabilities and ensure that they can be amended or changed in the future to accommodate people. And the other thing that I wanted to go through was some of the new tools for accessibility that the Liberal Party has set up with essential accessibility. So they've set up a sort of central system to download keyboard and mouse replacement solutions for free for disabled people. Now these tools can be used on a standard PC, and they can be used by anyone with dexterity challenges or reading difficulties arising from a variety of conditions, including stroke or paralysis, arthritis, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, cerebral palsy, age-related factors, limited proficiency in English, literary deficiencies, dyslexia, and other learning issues. Now, essential accessibility is enhanced communication support for people who have trouble reading, typing, or moving a mouse. It helps us meet customer service, employment, and information and community standards, and it's mandated by the Accessibility for Ontarians with Disabilities Act. Okay. Now,
And now we're going to head with Allison, who is going to talk about some events that she went to, as well as I did. So, Allison, you want to take it away?
Yeah, thank you, DP.
No worries.
So, there were two events that I went to, one of them that I went with DP.
Yeah.
The first event that I went was the Kickstart Disability Arts and Culture Days. And then the other show that I also went to was the Possibilities 15th Annual Inclusion Art Show and Sale, with Deepy.
Yep.
For those who don't know what Kickstart is, it is a disability arts and culture company that gives artists with disabilities a voice. On September 28th, so like a month ago, I was able to see 10 artists with disabilities talk for 5 minutes about their art. Let's take a listen to three artists, Olivia Dresinger, Margot Wask, and Laura Offrey.
Very large pictures. The whole thing started just after I graduated from university with my fashion design diploma, and I had this little piece of paper, and I knew there was absolutely no way I was going to be a fashion designer. During my time at school, I learned some very hard and honest truths about art and capitalism. That it would be expected that I exploit other countries' labor and environment to build my own career. This was what everyone did. It was standard practice. I had seen behind the curtain and I was horrified. So I was spending my summer working in the back of a windowless fabric store, as one with dead dreams does, doing very minimal labor for very minimal pay, and I decided I just wanted to make a portrait out of fabric. Let's back up a bit more. I was born autistic, and that means I am pretty obsessed with details, often to the point where I can forget the larger picture. Details keep me focused. If I can break down a larger task into smaller ones, it feels more doable. My art throughout my whole life has included a lot of details and often stayed on the smaller side. I hunched my way through high school under a certain curtain of long hair, pouring over tiny eyelashes and dewdrops with micron pens and individual pixels, generally avoiding the world that didn't understand or respect an autistic person. But if they didn't understand me, at least they could understand my art. And this time I wanted to go big. So the first one, Patient Zero, was my own face. Why? No special introspective reason, really. It was just in front of me, and I guess it was okay if I screwed it all up. Along the way, I found programs online that helped me create the designs. These programs take the photos I use and the fabric samples I insert and sort them into the images I create. I went back to my job and ordered samples of every pink, peach, brown, yellow fabric I could find and then set off scanning and adjusting until I had something I liked. When I make my pieces, I cannot see the whole. I only have the details to concentrate on. It's often so obscure that I'm not even sure what part I'm actually working on beyond hair, I guess, or mouth, and I actually prefer it this way. There is no way to be confused or disappointed or worry about realism in a portrait. It's all mathematically figured out beforehand. All I need to do is piece together the details. Once I was done with my own face, I decided to go bigger. Why did I make a giant quilt of Tom Hiddleston's face? The short answer truly is, I felt like it. I wanted to make a big quilt, a portrait. Push my skills and my materials to the limit. Why an actor? I like them. Being autistic, I have often been told over and over how I do not understand social cues, or I'm lacking empathy, or I'm either some sad child in need of a cure, or a hate crime waiting to happen. I am none of these things, though I am a bit awkward at parties. I like actors because I myself am one. Both in the literal sense that I studied it in school and have performed on stage and screen, but as well, every day I am an actor. Putting on a neurotypical face in order to be seen as normal and to avoid crushing ostracization. I am fascinated by the idea of getting into character, which is something I do every day before I leave my home. I am Laura Offrey, the construct, who has lines and motivation. And then when I'm able to come home, I can peel it all off and be myself again. In case you are wondering, I am not myself right now. That's the acting. This quilt took a year to complete, with me holed up in my house like some kind of medieval lady waiting for a foreign war over sheep to be finished. And I cut and I sewed and I sewed, and then I quit halfway through because I was never going to finish it, and then I picked it up about 4 months later because I was about half done and I may as well try and get it finished. So this quilt is the largest thing I have ever done, and I think I accomplished things with it. What specifically those things are, I'm still not quite sure. But after I was finished sewing it, I went to show it to several quilting groups and master quilters, and they told me, "You've invented something new that's never been done before." So I guess accidents happen. And somehow, after finishing that quilt, I still wasn't done. I've continued on doing more portraits, experimenting with size and rotation, color, and black and white. In the future, I have plans to do landscapes, other portraits, more abstract designs, but I guess portraits are my favorite for now. Tina Fey was created as an experiment rotating my image on its side, so the pattern is in diamonds, while my newest project, Tatiana Maslany, is done in different sizes of black and white. As I continue to grow and develop as an artist, refining my technique, I hope to add my knowledge and experience to future generations of artists. And some really big quilts. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Margot Wask. I was born in Vancouver, BC. I love 1960s and 70s pop culture, thrifting, cats, writing, vlogging, and art. I am autistic. Woo. Receiving my autism diagnosis 3 years ago gave me an explanation as to why I was so weird or different. What a relief. Being autistic encompasses my entire being. Since I see the world differently, it translates in different ways. My favorite way to decompress is by expressing myself creatively. I work best in natural lighting, when I am alone, and in a quiet environment. Art has always been a great escape from my everyday life. It was always there for me when I was struggling the most. Since 2008, I have been using the pseudonym Retrophiliac to describe my artist persona and brand. I define retrophiliac as lover of past things. The amount of times that people have said, "Sweetie, you're not an autistic artist, you're just an artist," is staggering. It's not a compliment. To me, it conveys a message that being autistic is inherently bad. That further reaffirms why I'm so passionate to make negative perceptions change. It's also no one's place to tell somebody else how to identify. I am self-taught, and my art consists of landscapes, patterns, cats, other animals, flowers, signs with text, and many more subjects. I mainly use paint markers and acrylic paint on canvas board. Some things I have been able to achieve is having the opportunity to show my art at various venues, with a few examples being galleries, events, and an online presentation. I've had the chance to speak out and defend autistic rights, utilizing media coverage and my loud voice to create change. Creating the Facebook group Made by Autistics came about because I saw a serious void for autistic-created and led content. The group offers a chance for fellow autistics to share their creations with others. At over 1,200 members, we are growing every day. Last year, I was given the opportunity to have a booth at Langley Arts Live. It was perfect. I combined my art and my activism, which up until that point, I was only able to achieve online through my website, navigatingjourney.com. My table was set up with very bright, vibrant art and information about being autistic prominently displayed. It was all in my own words and based on my own experiences. Even if people didn't stop for my art, they seemed to stop to learn about me. I find that my art really speaks from within. It's the perfect segue to discussing what autistic people are capable of and breaking down harmful negative stereotypes. A reporter actually approached my table and told me that what I was doing would make an excellent story. I ended up on the upper right corner of two September 2018 newspapers, The Cloverdale Reporter and Peace Arch News. A teacher saw it, and that led to being asked to participate in Surrey School's first Youth with Autism Conference. I ran an art workshop and got to experience what it was like to be on a Q&A panel. I also ended up being interviewed by Gloria Makarenko on CBC's On the Coast, which was very exciting. I continue to look for more creative opportunities to expand my reach. My Etsy store has gained traction, and being able to successfully crowdfund through Kickstarter, I have the ability to put 6 holiday cards into production. I was fully backed and exceeded my goal within the first 4 days. I hope to find a local shop to carry my art, and we'll be showcasing 4 pieces at the upcoming Inclusion Art Show on October 10th. In 2020, I will be showcasing work at Chickpea and will be participating in Kickstart's Nothing Without Us exhibition. Henri Matisse said, "Creativity takes courage," and I couldn't agree more. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Olivia Dreisinger, a second generation SICK artist and independent scholar concerned with all things disability. My presentation today is tentatively titled Becoming SICK, Becoming Amateur, and we'll trace my last few projects and that how they have run parallel with my own illnesses. So this is a still from my film Disabled, made in 2017 for my master's. The film grew out of a period of increasing unhappiness during my graduate studies. During my first year, my chronic illnesses were becoming more permanent and less episodic. Without an official diagnosis in hand, there was very little my university could offer me in terms of accommodation or access to resources. Away from home and lacking access to proper healthcare, I also wasn't going to get a diagnosis anytime soon. As each semester continued, it became clear that my department too was ill-equipped to handle a SICK student. I could barely make it to campus most days, and professors repeatedly threatened to fail me out of their courses. I thought about exiting the program, feeling pushed out and unsupported by the university. Around this time, I returned to an old interest of mine, the Twilight franchise. Returning to young adult literature also led me back to other non-canonical fiction and forms I had been interested in as a youth. I began reading Twilight fan fiction, looking at fan art and watching fan videos. I reread one fanfic in particular, a femme/fic, where Bella Swan is torn between her feelings for Edward Cullen and her new feelings for a girl with cerebral palsy. From there, I taught myself 3D animation and made a 40-minute animated film for my master's thesis about the role of disability in fanfiction. And using a free fan-made avatar of River Tam from Joss Whedon's television show Firefly as my narrator. And River is a non-visibly disabled character, and she really served as a good stand-in for my own imperceptibly unwell body. Alone in my room, I was able to animate and create according to my own body's schedule and needs. After university, I wasn't entirely sure how to support myself or make the projects that I wanted to do due to my illnesses. Somehow, I landed funding through the Canada Council for the Arts to make my documentary, pictured here, Handler is Crazy, a half an hour film following the woman Coyote Moon and her medical and psychiatric service dog Banner. The film explores issues surrounding non-visible disabilities and discrimination against service dog teams. Banner, the dog, also cosplays, so I was really interested in how cosplaying was an atypical labor the dog performed as a service animal. I hired a support worker to drive and cook meals for me during filming and travel days because we had to travel to Menlo, Georgia, a town of 500 people, 2 hours outside of Atlanta. And this was to ensure that I wouldn't crash physically during production. And having a support person gave me hope that I could still make big projects like this going forward in my career. My future work, if funding is approved, will focus on documenting young, non-visibly chronically ill disabled activists, artists, and community members in BC, alongside their medications, medical equipment, mobility aids, and more, in the hopes of making them more visible and reduce the discrimination we experience daily. My main goal is to push back against the appearance of health and how illness marks the body in other ways. These were some test shots I took before I developed the idea further, and going forward, I hope to photograph around 20 people. Thank you.
So I hope you enjoyed those clips with Olivia Dresinger, Margot Wask, and Laura Offrey. Another show that I was able to attend with DP was the Possibilities 15th Annual Inclusion Art Show and Sale on October 10th at the Heritage Hall. Those who don't know about Possibilities, it is an organization to assist people with developmental disabilities to lead meaningful and healthy lives by participating with the community to provide a comprehensive range of person-centered services for individuals and the families who care for them. DP and I were able to talk to Margot Wask, who is an artistic artist, and I was able to talk with Colin Darge, Justine Chubb, and Monique Schweitzer-Nelson. We had asked them what the event is all about, and this kind of an event means to them and so much more. Let's take a listen. What were your thoughts, DP, of it?
I thought it was amazing. There's so much talent and so much creativity around the individuals with disabilities. We saw a lot of art, like some paintings from pottery to actual jewelry making. So it was very, very creative. It's amazing how much talent there is between everyone. And it was just a proud moment for everyone who was there, right?
Yeah, and your sister was there too.
Yeah, my sister was there. She was selling her art. She made these candle holders with candles in it. And yeah, she pretty much sold her creation, and she's Yay. Proud. Yeah.
So let's take a listen to all of them. So we're here with Monique Nelson at the Possibilities Inclusion Art Show. So can you tell us who you are and what your role is at Possibilities?
Sure, Allison. So my name is Monique Nelson, and I'm currently the Director of Community Engagement for Possibilities. I've been with the association for about 11 years, and my role includes family support as well as all of the typical communications functions and stakeholder engagement activities that you might expect of a large nonprofit.
Lovely. What is the Possibilities Art Show event all about?
It is all about inclusion through the arts. So we have artists with diverse abilities, many of whom have a developmental disability. Some others have perhaps other challenges through acquired brain injury or mental health. And they find their space in form of self-expression through the arts. And that's why we celebrate. It's a celebration of diversity pride, actually, and disability pride in our community. We hold it every year in October, which is known as Community Inclusion Month in BC and in Canada.
Lovely. Can you tell us what kind of things are presented in this art show?
We have all different types of art, everything from textiles to photography, illustrations, painting, glassworks, jewelry making, and pottery. Those are the typical media that we have in our show.
Wow. You talked about what things are presented at the art show. When did the event started, and why is this event so important?
Oh. Well, the event started 15 years ago, Allison, and I think it's going to be 15 more based on what I'm seeing here on the floor today. It's really important because people who are marginalized need a forum to celebrate and showcase what they can do. And that's what this show really does, is people who come into our show who have never met folks with developmental disabilities or other challenges are blown away by the talent. And it's a wonderful opportunity to connect with artists one-on-one, to learn about different perspectives, and to overall create those connections that help us make more meaningful community connections and more inclusive neighborhoods as we move forward as a society, and recognizing people with disabilities as having full rights. And that begins with understanding how they express themselves.
Lovely. What are some of the challenges you have faced when organizing this kind of event?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, it always is a challenge when you're collaborating with many different agencies and studios. But it's only a challenge because we have so many people to serve. We have over 200 artists and about 1,000 pieces of artwork in the show. So really, the challenge is just a logistical one of making sure everyone gets the space they need to show what they wish to show in any given year. There's never a challenge with that. A challenge that we can't overcome with fitting people's art in the space. The challenge we sometimes have is getting more people from the neighborhood to walk in the doors. People who may think it's not for them, that the Inclusion Art Show is for other people with disabilities, when it's not. We welcome everyone in our doors to experience the joy that these artists bring.
Wonderful. What are some of the goals you are hoping to accomplish after the event is done?
I think one of my biggest goals is to see us sell out. If we could ever sell out all the art, I think that would be amazing. We typically sell 80 to 90% of all the art that comes in. So my biggest goal is just to keep moving that number up, because those sales have a positive economic impact on the artists and studios, which help them remain strong and in community.
Lovely. How has the artist's disability influenced their art?
Often it's a matter of perspective and a matter of technique. So depending upon an artist's perspective, what they choose to create or zone in on may be different than another person's take. But that would be true of any artist, I think. Sometimes physically, artists have challenges with vision or with the steadiness of the hand or with concentration. So their works may reflect that, and there's beauty in that, and people appreciate it. So there's room for all kinds of technique, all kinds of media, and all kinds of ways to express oneself through visual arts.
Lovely. Can you tell us some of the comments you've received about this event?
Oh, I just met a gentleman today who walked in off the street from Victoria, and he was really impressed, and he said, the art's not very expensive. I think, really? That's great. Well, we want to make sure, you know, the artists set their prices, so I'll be sure to pass that feedback on to them. So it was really neat to hear that. I also met a program director from another agency that have two studios participating in our show, and she too is buying more art for her home and her office and can't see this event ever going away anytime soon, because she sees how much the artists are enjoying being here, and their support workers as well. Art facilitators, in fact, most of them.
Lovely. Once the artist has sold their art or crafts, where does the money go?
Oh, after they've sold their art? Yeah. So we take registrations, and each piece is priced and tracked all the way through. So at the end, the sales are tallied up, and the studio or the individual artist is compensated minus a small commission that we take of 15% to help produce and promote the show.
Lovely. Is there anything you would like to say to our CITR listeners or the people at this event?
Absolutely. We may have 200 artists in this show, but we can always fit more. So if you're at all interested, please follow our website. It's inclusionartshow.com. That's where we post our registration forms, and you can have details about how to get involved as an artist or as a volunteer if you'd like to come and help us deliver the show. So stay tuned. We put all of our information there, and registration usually opens in July. So let's give people time to think ahead for next year.
And for an emerging artist, what advice would you give to them or an artist with a disability?
Oh, what a great question. Today I had the pleasure of purchasing a piece from someone, and I was the first sale. And the expression on his face and his mom's was one of immediate kinship. So the only thing I can think is, put yourself out there. Art is so subjective, and it will appeal to someone. And we will be doing our very best to bring more people in these doors to keep supporting this art show. So I think as an artist with a disability, your voices need to be heard and your forms of expression are appreciated. And we want to help you do that. More of that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me, Allison.
Hi, everyone. I'm here with Margo, who is an artist. We're at Heritage Hall. Thanks, Margo, for allowing me to interview you. So can you introduce yourself to our CITR listeners?
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm Margo. I am an autistic artist, and I just absolutely love creating vibrant, beautiful, amazingly colorful art.
What made you want to participate in this event?
I really appreciate events that make art accessible and include everybody. It is so hard being an artist in Vancouver and finding a venue that actually will accept me. You know, I've had gift shops completely ignore me, read my messages, not comment until I say something like, you know, your lack of responses is giving me anxiety. And then finally they say something, and I still have other shops that ignore me. So having the opportunity to show my art and be accepted by everybody and be embraced is just something that there needs to be more of, and I couldn't be more thankful to be part of this experience.
You kind of touched it earlier, but what kind of art do you do?
Yeah, so I'm really inspired by the 1960s and 70s. I love pop culture from that time, so I get a lot of my influence from actually television shows and music. I love the Brady Bunch and the Monkees and the Partridge Family and really kitschy, almost tacky shows that have this amazing color palette and patterns that they use. And from there, listening to that music and watching those shows, I feel like I'm able to consume that and have that come back out on the canvas.
So what kind of art are you selling today, like in today's event?
Yeah, I have one piece entered for the contest for home, where the winner gets their art on cards that I believe are going to be sold to Profit Possibilities, which is amazing. That is a house with a beautiful pink sky, lots of pink, and really vibrant with a lot of movement. Then I have a couple other landscape pieces with houses or cabins, with trees and mountains and water. And then I have a really cute orange cat in a cup.
That sounds wonderful. What are some challenges you have faced as an artist?
I think people taking me seriously, being able to make friends with other artists. I think a lot of other artists find that it's an opportunity for them to be competitive, or they're really good socially. And that's something I am not good at. So when I see people that have all these friends and, you know, they hang out drinking beer and tattooing each other and that's like their scene, that's just not something I ever connected with. And that's what's really trendy nowadays. So I think just being different and finding a venue that's really going to accept me. I went to Granville Island one day and took notes of different shops, and like nobody's getting back to me or they're not interested. Vancouver's been horrible for the most part in me just trying to find a venue for my work. Most of my venues I find online, or even places out of province or in the States. Most of my customers, actually 95% to 98% of my customers, are American through Etsy. So it's just been a challenge trying to find anything local.
So on that note, what advice would you give to someone who is new to the art and creative world?
Yeah, so what I would tell them is just keep on trucking, just keep going. Because you know what, if you make art out as an expression of your soul and you do it for yourself to unwind, to relax, to find some kind of inner purpose, I think that's the most important thing you can do with art. Anything else above that is just extra and is just a bonus. And you know, when you find the right people that appreciate you and your art, you know, your art says so much about who you are as a person, and I think that's an amazing way to connect with others. So ultimately, do it for yourself and consider everything else secondary.
So what are your goals that you are hoping to accomplish as an artist?
I have a few lofty goals. Definitely one of them is finding a venue in Vancouver to showcase my art or to sell my cards. I actually was able to get 6 holiday card designs, 1 Hanukkah, 4 Christmas, and 1 with a couple cats and a snowman, Kickstart crowdfunded in 4 days. I reached, my goal was $800 and I reached over $900 in 4 days. So I'm going to be getting those cards soon. And since I cannot find a venue locally for those cards, I always like to give back. So I've actually in the past donated pieces of art with cats on them to a cat charity called the Surrey Community Cat Coalition. But with these cards, I hope to donate a stack of cards to VOCRA, the Vancouver Orphan Kitten Rescue. And I'm also hoping to donate more cards to the Surrey Community Cat Coalition. And if I can find some local SPCAs that would be interested, I'd like to do that. I just want to get those cards out there. I don't want to make a cent off of them in that regard. If I can make money to donate back to the cats and they can decide how much they want to charge for them, that to me is like the best thing I can do. Cats have such a place in my heart and I love them dearly, and they're just my favorite creature in the world.
That is amazing. How has your disability influenced your art?
Yeah, I think being autistic is just an alternative worldview. You know, I am neurodiverse. I am not neurotypical, and because of my diversity, I see things so differently, and I feel that that alternative view and that way of just interpreting the world in a way that isn't like anybody else has really allowed me to, like I said before, you know, interpret music, interpret things I see visually, and kind of spit that back out in a creative way. So a lot of people take influence from other artists, but for me, I do, but that's not my main focus. So I just think being autistic and being artistic at the same time, having my art drive the conversation of what autistic people are capable of, and being able to break down all those barriers that we've had put up, you know, against us for years and years and decades, you know, just being able to break that down and say, look, I'm an artist. Do you want to have that conversation about what autistic people are capable of? Because I'll have it with you. That to me is like the best thing I can do.
What is your favorite part of creating art?
The ability to zone out from the world. I find that I'm a very anxious and obsessive person, and my anxiety and my obsessions kind of play off of each other, and it's really hard for me to relax. I also have attention deficit disorder, and I'm really just like all over the place. I have to keep myself busy. So a lot of fellow autistics like to stim, and I feel like for me, yes, I have ways to stim, like twirling my hair, but really making my art and doing that and doing my art is just like the best, like most amazing thing. Like, it just is so freeing and just wonderful.
Why do you think an event like this is so important to have?
So many artists have so many barriers. And the barriers that are created are really created by the elite. And Vancouver is known for having a lot of money. But unfortunately, you have people like Chip Wilson who are making it extremely hard for artists to have a venue. He raises taxes on properties and makes it unaffordable. So that's just for, you know, I would say mostly neurotypical artists. They already have a problem getting their foot in the door if they're not part of these cliques, these elite cliques. But then you have people who have different disabilities and different abilities, and it's already so hard to get anywhere, it feels like. So just having an art show that actually is going to include people and give people that opportunity in Vancouver, in a very central place in Vancouver, is so important, because it's just not an opportunity that comes by very often. And I'm so thrilled that I got to be part of it this year.
What's next for you, like after this event?
So I'm going to be hopefully receiving the funds to get those cards ordered. I'll be able to put those get my orders all filled for the people that funded it, get those cards donated to help cats. And then next year, I'm going to be part of Kickstart Disability Arts and Cultures. I believe the show's called Nothing Without Us. It will be in Harrison Hot Spring. I'm not sure exactly what the date is for that. It's online somewhere. And then I'm also going to be part of, I believe, a month-long display at the restaurant Chickpea as well.
Is there anything else you want our listeners to know?
So if anybody wants to get in touch with me, they can find me on Twitter. I'm Artful Retro on Twitter. On Facebook, I'm facebook.com/retrophiliac. So RETROPHILIAC, which is also my artist pseudonym. So generally, people look up retrophiliac, I'll come up. And my website is navigatingjourney.com, where I do a lot of blogging, a lot of autism activism and advocacy and rants and all kinds of stuff on there as well.
Thank you so much, Margo. Best of luck, and keep us updated on what you're doing.
So, who are you?
I am Colin Michael Darge.
What do you do?
I'm a musician, actor, and an LGBT activist.
What are we doing here today?
I am supporting my very own first CD that I ever made, and the inspiration of it was from Metallica, Megadeth, and I did some improv stuff, but there will be more to come, hopefully.
You do art and support the LGBTQ community.
Yes, that's right. I like doing art. It's the music speaks lots of words and stuff for me. It's very therapeutic, and so that's why I do it. And for the LGBT, it's just, you know, brings people together for different kind of music.
And I heard you also collaborate with Emily Carr.
Yeah, that was very unique. Going there and seeing what all kinds of different stuff they have, it was very, very cool. Very cool.
Do you do anything else with the LGBTQ community?
Well, I've been to Pride. I've been to one here and also at Sunshine Coast. I did a lot of Pride this summer and hoping to do more in the future, yeah.
And what is this event today?
It's the art show that Stage Door represents, and there's a whole bunch of artists that have disabilities that make art for other people to see. It's very cool.
Thank you. And we're here talking to Justine Chubb at the Possibilities Inclusion Art Show. So can you tell us who you are and your role at Possibilities?
So my name is Justine Chubb, and I work as the Senior Communication Specialist for Possibilities. And I've been doing that for, almost 7 years now. And since I started, I've also been on the art show planning committee. And so I guess this is my 7th art show to date.
How has the artist's disabilities influenced their art?
So much so. What's really unique about our show is we have a variety of different people who participate. Lots of diverse abilities. So everything from folks who have developmental disabilities or intellectual disabilities, autism, physical disabilities, hearing loss, vision, acquired brain injuries. And so, all of that, is put into their artwork. And it's I think what's really neat is all of the work is original and handcrafted, and every piece is different. And every piece tells a story about their life. And so I think that's what we want to share out with the greater community, and to share their stories, because it's so important to be able to do that and to continue doing that.
Is there anything you would like to say to our CITR listeners or the people at this event?
It's my favorite event of the year. We host or participate in almost probably over 100 events throughout the calendar year, and this one just means the world to me. I've been a part of the planning for 7 years, and anyone that will listen to me, I'll say, please come out to the show. You're going to be blown away by the work that's here, and you'll be pleasantly surprised, and you'll walk away with lots of amazing different artworks that you can treasure and that you can put into your home. And like I said, if we talked to lots of guests, and there's nothing better than hearing them say that they're so happy with what they purchased, and every time they go into the room where their art is hung or whatever it may be, it just puts a smile on their face. So come on down to the show, it's fantastic, and we hope to see you guys next year.
And what advice would you give to a budding artist or an artist with a disability?
Keep creating, participate in the show if you are not. It's a really great opportunity for you to get the word out about the work that you do, and to a chance for you to connect with the greater community, to share your art. And I can't stress enough is continue to be creative, continue producing that work, and because people want to hear your stories, and there are stories to be told. So,
thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
And that wraps up our show for today. So please check our podcast later on today. But if you are interested on joining our team or think that there is an issue we should bring up on our show, please send us an email at accessibilitycollective@citr.ca.
Special thank you to Kickstart and Possibilities for allowing me to interview them and their participants, and having these great events for everybody to attend and enjoy. Hi, Grandpa.
Hi, Allison's Grandpa.
Please be sure to like our All Access Pass Facebook page.
If you're on Twitter or Instagram or both, please follow us @access_CITR. And if you missed part of our live show today and want to listen again, or maybe you want to listen to our past shows, you can do so on CITR.ca by going on the search box and typing in All Access Pass.
Thank you for listening, and tune into our show in 2 weeks.
Wednesday, November 13th at 3 p.m.
Please stick around for C-Pop Connection with Sabrina Hisai coming up next. Thanks, everyone.